is going on? It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had a chance to hang out with Judah and Brian of the band Judah and the Lion over Zoom video. Judah was born and raised in Middle Tennessee and talks about how he got into music. Actually grew up playing basketball and baseball, went to Belmont on a baseball scholarship. But during an injury his freshman year, that's when he really started to learn guitar and started to songwrite. Brian grew up in Illinois and started playing music at a very early age. He started off on piano at around 10 years old, then picked up guitar. He ended up attending Belmont University as well, and that's where he met Judah. The guys tell us how they met and ended up forming Judah and the Lion. They won the showcase at Belmont in front of 8,000 people, which was a huge validation for them. They talked about putting out their first couple EPs, playing over 100 shows a year. Brian ended up dropping out of Belmont to tour with the band full time. They tell us about all of the records from their first album, Kids These Days, through Full Cop and Roll, which was the album that had Take It All Back and Suit and Jacket on it. They talked to us about Take It All Back and how the original version was much different than the version that made it onto the radio. And I love the original version if you have a chance to check that out. But they re-released it on the Full Cop and Roll Deluxe release. That's where the radio one comes about, Take It All Back 2.0. Judah and Brian tell us all about Pep Talks and how that album was the first time they were really, really vulnerable about writing about things that were happening to them and how they're struggling with a lot of hardships. And they get into detail about that. We hear about Revival and we talk a lot about the band's new album, which is called The Process. It is amazing. They break down the five stages of grief. So we hear about how the album kind of came together. They talked to us about working with K-Flay on one of the songs, and it's just an incredible record. And they promised a tour coming up after the album comes out. You can watch the interview with Brian, Judah, and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It would be amazing if you subscribe to our channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you are listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, it would be awesome if you follow us there as well and hook us up with a 5-star review.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Judah and the Lion. Awesome. Well, I'm Adam. I'm super excited to chat with you both. And I had a chance to hear the album. It's really, really, really good.
Thanks, man.
Dude, thanks so much.
Yeah, I love how it's, you know, it's broken down and you have the little pieces of the instrumentals that kind of pull it all together with the five phases of grief. It's really, really a creative and it's a fantastic record.
Thanks, man. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I love it. So, well, let's just get started here. So I always start with like where you guys were born and raised, and we'll talk about how you met and then, you know, the band and the new album and all that great stuff. So cool. Brian, love what it. About you? Where were you born and raised? I know you both met in Nashville, still there, but where were you born and raised originally?
Yeah, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs in a town called Wheaton. And went to high school there, started learning piano, taking lessons at a young age, and then playing in bands in middle school, just with my friends and doing the talent shows and that kind of thing. And then eventually moved to Nashville to go to college at Belmont. And that's
for piano? Is that or did you go for something totally different?
Obviously, I was studying guitar originally.
Oh, okay.
When I came to Belmont, and then after a year of guitar, I had met Judah and Nate, started playing together, and I was playing mandolin even from the beginning of meeting those guys. So I switched to being a mandolin major after that first year of guitar. Wow. And then after that year, dropped out and we started touring full time.
Geez, okay. That's amazing. So you
So
started
that's
on
kind of
piano,
the.
though. Originally, it was a piano, and then eventually you started playing guitar.
Yeah.
Okay. At what age did you switch, or did you continue both piano and guitar?
Yeah, so piano, I was taking lessons since I was like 10, and still it's one of my favorite instruments to play. It's the whole keyboard laid out in front of you. It's a good way to like think about music and to think about what you're playing. So I've always continued with piano that whole time. But yeah, around sixth grade was when my grandma got me a guitar for Christmas. She gave me
Awesome.
the best Christmas presents. She gave me a unicycle one year. She gave me a guitar. So then I started picking up guitar as well around middle school.
And mandolin, was that something that came later, or was it just another instrument you picked up?
Yeah, then mandolin was actually a Christmas gift from my siblings. And that was like at the end of high school. I think I was like a senior in high school.
Wow.
So right before I came to college, I started picking around on the mandolin, right before I met Nate and Judah.
Wow, that's amazing. And Judah, you're originally from Tennessee, correct?
I'm from Middle Tennessee, Cookeville.
Okay. Tell me about Cookeville and then how you kind of got into
Old
music.
Cook Vegas. It's like a nice, like beautiful small town. I grew up kind of near the water. Like there's kind of like a bunch of waterfalls and lakes there. So,
Awesome.
I actually kind of grew up like a major jock. I was like super into like AAU basketball and like travel baseball, and picked up music like when I went through like kind of a tough injury after my freshman year in high school, and it kind of just took me out for like a few months. So I kind of like Brian, like I started on the piano with trying to like learn how to read music, and that was just like really never for me. I think I was probably a little bit too ADD for that. Then that summer after my freshman year injury in my back, my uncle taught me how to play guitar. And then I kind of started playing like the piano by ear. So I kind of realized like I wasn't really meant for maybe the classical approach to learning music. It was more of honestly the Nashville number system that really kind of unlocked a lot of things for me.
Oh,
But
really? Were you
unlike
doing
Brian.
that down to, were you playing like a down in the honky tonks and stuff? Like, I mean, that whole number system is so crazy to me.
Well, actually, that's the way my uncle taught me. So it was very
Whoa.
like, and once I kind of got the number system, everything else kind of made sense to me in a weird way. And I'm not like frustratingly good at anything like Brian is. Brian can pick up anything and just play it and play it really well.
That's an exaggeration, but thank you.
I play well enough to get by with writing. So,
And hit huge re and write hit records and everything else.
Well, just like that's what I even that freshman year when I just knew the GNC chord, I like just fell in love with writing music and just how just like how it can kind of you can connect emotionally with something so simple but yet so like beautiful, and somehow that can connect to another's heart. That just always kind of was so compelling to me about music. So and then I ended up playing baseball at Belmont
Yeah,
and
I
meeting the
saw that.
boys.
So you must have been, I mean, a very, very, you said you were, a jock growing up, or you played sports, but I mean, to make it to that level at baseball, I mean, that's pretty wild. I mean, was
It
that
was
like
fun.
your whole
We,
life?
yeah. I mean, I really wanted to play college basketball, to be honest. And ended up getting recruited to play baseball, which I probably had more of like the athletic figure for baseball. But we had a couple championships when we were there. Lucky enough to be around some really good players. I was very average. So and then met the boys, and then like it was just kind of on from there. Like I was playing with like rock bands and like kind of in and out of like, I don't know, like synth rock, electric guitar bands, and both boys, Nate and Brian, were studying these like folk instruments. So we met that one time, jammed out, like really connected relationally, and then next thing you know, we were like starting a band. It's kind of crazy. Back in 2011.
Wow. Okay. So did you like, oh, how did you all meet? Was it like in a class or you run into each other?
So it's not like it wasn't like out of the blue necessarily at Belmont to like go and jam with people, because you know, Belmont is just kind of this hub of just like amazing talent and musicians. And that, I think it was like that summer previous to that semester, I was studying music business. So one of the perks of going to Belmont is you have access to all these like amazing studios.
Yeah.
And they're free, you know, because they kind of come along, you know, with tuition and whatnot. But I was writing these songs kind of secretly and kind of playing them for my family, but didn't really have like the courage to like, or didn't really even like have the ambition to like record them. I just wanted to write songs. And my mom was like, you know, you're at this school and, you know, 2 years later, like when you're graduated, these studios aren't going to be free, you know? So, I met the boys, like my roommate at the time, randomly knew Nate. Nate knew Brian because they, again, were like kind of the folk instrument, the instrumentation, like they were just learning and playing a lot together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met in the cafeteria, like had lunch, just connected like relationally, similar backgrounds, very different people, but like, foundationally very similar. And like our, I guess our heart for music was very similar. So it was just, that, it was like right before that winter break in 2011, December, we like went to the Bell Tower after the calf. I like remember like calling my mom, like kind of emotional, and was just like, man, I just feel like this is kind of the sound that, you know, we're kind of meant to like bring to the world. So from then on, we were like, Nate dropped out really quick. I was like, dude, I got 2 more years of baseball. I can't be dropping out. But, you know, we ended up kind of being done with school. Brian dropped out, Nate dropped out, and then we kind of hit the ground running in 2013 with touring, and then kind of the rest we just kind of just kept doing it until you know, something happened.
Wow. Did you, so then you ended up finishing at Belmont through playing baseball?
Yeah, I probably would have dropped out, but we had just come off like a conference championship in the class. My senior class kind of was the class to kind of do it again if we were going to three-peat. So I couldn't like let my teammates down.
Yeah, 100%.
In that way. And so we finished that spring. And I guess, I mean, I like that previous summer, we would do like house show tours and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we really probably kind of started that 2013 year, you know, touring about 150 shows a year.
Jeez. Okay. So did you, like, once you guys all met and had some songs together, did you record like those first records in at Belmont?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we recorded our first like two EPs there. We like won, they have like what they call like the showcase series at Belmont. We won like the showcase. And that honestly was like kind of like a launching pad for us to be able to go and like do house shows and stuff like that, because at these showcases, you know, all of the students have to go to it if they wanted to get credit, you know, for like convocation credit or whatever. So our first show was in front of like 8,000 students or whatever. And Dang. So just that alone, you know, they're going back home, you know, wherever they're from, and kind of getting the word out and stuff like that as well. So that was such a great, like, lucky launching pad for us. It also really spoiled us because we're playing in front of 8,000 people. and then we go play a rock show in Louisville in front of 10 people. but we really did it the old school way. Like we got a lot of great advice, and we just, this roadie guy in Memphis, saw us like when we were up and coming and just said, hey, kind of brought me back, was like, you know, you guys kind of have what it takes. But if you want to do this, like y'all need to be touring about 150 shows a year. And so, you know, before like TikTok and like all that stuff, you know, the way that the old school way was just like, you know, go and play those hard shows, go and kind of, you know, take that road that's a little bit harder to travel. And it definitely kicked our asses. Like we were touring a lot, but somehow, some way, like, it felt like in each city, it just kind of kept growing each time we would come back. And so I think seeing that response, I think for Brian and I and the guys, was always kind of enough for us to kind of keep propelling forward.
Yeah. And was, Like Brian, you mentioned being in bands and everything, like obviously prior to this, like playing that talent show or that showcase, the 8,000 people, what was that like? Was that just like much bigger than any of the other shows you had done, or were you in bands that were doing the touring and trying to make it prior to this band?
No, all the bands that I was in was just kind of like high
Okay.
school talent show. And it was, a lot of those friends who I played with are professional musicians today as well. But the most that we would ever play in front of is like 600 people at the high school.
Okay.
So it definitely felt like a huge level up to start playing with Nate and Judah, and then soon after that be I think that's the cool thing about the Belmont showcases is they really give that opportunity for artists and bands to get in front of a lot of people. With you can guarantee that you're going to be playing to a big crowd, even if you don't have a following, even if people don't know who you are. That's a really special thing that they have going on. So when we were able to win that first showcase and then play in the best of the best, that was like such a cool jumping off point for us to be able to go do that house show tour in front of 10 people in Kansas City and just really build from something.
When did you leave? Was it after that showcase that you ended up leaving school, or had you guys kind of achieved, I know you I mean that even that Sweet Tennessee EP did like really well, like made Billboard and all these things. Like, were you at that level yet, or was it okay, I think this is gonna work, I'm just gonna go with it because this is my dream.
It was always a slow and steady growth, I think, for us. Like it can look like from the outside, like, whoa, they blew up, they got this hit and just everything exploded. But really, like, it's always been that slow and steady growth. So after that, the best of the best showcase at Belmont, we did a summer tour, which was maybe 10 shows, and they were, I think all of them or most of them were house shows, where we hit people up on Facebook, said, hey, we're going to do a house show tour. If you want to host us, we'll play a show at your house. Just
Wow.
maybe feed us dinner and let us sleep on your floor.
Crash on the floor, yeah.
So we took the van, did that. And then I did one more semester at school. That was in the summer of 2012, I believe. And then I did one more semester at school. Nate and Judah actually picked up a part-time job, went out during that semester. I think we did a couple hometown shows. We played a show in Athens, Georgia, which was a big moment for us at the 40 Watt, which is a cool kind of divey venue down there with a lot of cool history. Ended up selling that show out from the momentum, like with the Sweet Tennessee EP. And then I dropped out after that semester, and that's when we went on the road full time, starting in the beginning of 2013.
And even with that first album, I mean, it's, you guys mentioned like people thought that you just came out and you had this hit, because that was much later though. That was like 2016, I think, right? When Take It All Back like took, it was the biggest song I remember. I was on terrestrial radio at the time in San Diego, and when that song came out, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing. I mean, it was insane. But you had an album before that and EPs before that that both did well, prior to that even really, happening, right?
Yeah, and we even came out with Full Cop and Roll, which is the album that Take It All Back is on. We came out with the original version of Take It All Back, and then we edited it
I love
to
that
make
original
it.
version, to be honest. Like with the chanting in the beginning and everything, it's so good.
But we changed it to make it more of a radio edit, and but that didn't happen until long, not long after, but maybe 6 months after the Full Cop and Roll came out. And then so we kind of, it's always been that slow build where we keep pushing forward and trying to figure out our lane, I guess.
So from like kids these days, was it just like you said, slow build? Were you guys just building, touring? And it sounds like you're touring a lot and playing a ton of shows and just kind of slowly gaining more people at the when you've returned to cities. And then obviously, well, folk and hip hop or folk hop and roll came out, and you had the original version of that song. And then what made you guys go and do the 2.0? Was it that a label or somebody come to you and be like, you know what, this could be like a huge hit, or was it something that you all decided on prior?
Yeah, that was you take it, Judah. I've been talking a
No,
lot.
you got it. Go
To
ahead. You're cruising.
the first part of that question, we had a lot of very supportive artists, a lot of them Nashville based, who we opened for in the beginning, which enabled us to start building a little bit of a fan base. So we toured with Andrew Rip, toured with Drew Holcomb, toured with Matt Carney.
Oh, Matt Carney's great. I've had him on here.
And Ben Rector. And so that enabled us to start doing our own headline shows, like following up some of those tours, and kind of start to build that momentum. We started playing Take It All Back before we even recorded it at those shows, and then recorded Folk Cop and Roll. We love the original version of Take It All Back. And it wasn't necessarily a conscious plan or decision, but we just kind of felt like we wanted it to be a little bit more concise and give a little bit more synth heavy vibe to it to make it friendly for radio. And so that's when I think even after the album was released, we kind of made that decision to ask our producer, our buddy Drew Long, to edit that version that we did with Dave Cobb and make it more suited.
Yeah, no, it's when that came out, like you guys said, it was just like it exploded. I mean, I was in San Diego, and I was on the radio there, and you guys are playing like the big shows there, the big radio shows at like I was at the other alternative radio station. You guys played a show for the other station, and it was just so
Dang,
much.
bro.
But I think you
Calling us
guys came
out.
to our show. I think you came to our show because we had Empire of the Sun. I think you guys showed up, like you played and came down to the show that we were doing because it was on the same
Oh,
day.
sorry.
But 91X played you guys too. So that was the station that I was on. But anyway, so that happens, it blows up, and then when you put out Pep Talks a couple of years later, was it something like, are you in this moment where like, do we got to try to follow this up? I mean, you had Suit and Tie, you had all these huge hits off of off that song or off that record. Like when you went into that album, did you feel like you had to kind of, did you feel pressure on it or anything like that? Or Suit and Jacket, I said Suit and Tie, but feel pressure on that?
I think it was like a good pressure. I our band, like we lean a bit like competitive within ourselves, or maybe I should speak for myself. Like I like that pressure kind of felt really fun because it was like there was maybe an expectation. But I think like for the three of us at the time, we were really longing so to just to kind of like stay true like to ourselves. And so Pep Talks ended up kind of being this like really, really for the first time, like very kind of vulnerable personal record. So it felt like there wasn't necessarily a pressure for, I didn't feel like a pressure of like, oh, like we need another hit or, our band can't survive without another, thing. Like it just felt like, hey, let's stay like within ourselves. Let's double down on being authentic and trying to be like vulnerable and help people along this kind of like journey. I ended up kind of going through a lot in those few years when we were touring back home kind of secretly with my parents going through a really rough divorce and my mom kind of really struggling with addiction, and a couple of like really close friends suicide. So it was just like a lot was kind of going on, intertwined with kind of the success of the band. And so Pep Talks was just kind of like putting the anchor down on like, hey, let's be raw and vulnerable, and hopefully like for this, like whoever does get to like listen to this, it'll be like healing for them in some sort of way. And so like the shows definitely after Pep Talks became a bit more like healing of sorts, and like and kind of intense in that way. And I guess this is a little bit of a rabbit hole, but it's just like I think we didn't really feel the pressure of having a hit, but like feeling like this maybe conviction to like write honest music.
Okay. Yeah. And that's
not,
what you...
not that the others, you know, wasn't, but right. It was like going through all that life and like learning how to navigate it, you know, mentally, was really difficult. So it was like, hey, you know, let's be honest about where we're at. And if we have a hit, we have a hit. If we don't, it'll at least connect with the people that it's supposed to connect with.
Yeah. 100%. And that's kind of, some of that is in the new album as well, or is just more, because I mean, this new album is really vulnerable and having those stages of, you know, grief and everything else. Like, was Revival similar as far as that goes, or did it come back on this new album?
Well, it's funny because, and Brian, you can chime in here too, whenever you want, but, it feels like we loved like our record stuff because it's almost like time stamps on like where we were in life.
Yeah.
Like Kids These Days was just like us being kids and like believing in ourselves. Me and Brian were like living in the same bed for 2 years because we couldn't afford rent. Like it was like, I mean, I look back, I don't, maybe me and Brian were talking about it. I was like, I don't know how, like we didn't have money for like 5 years. Like, I don't like, we were, I would make like egg sandwiches with like steak, you know, seasoning on it to differentiate like the meals, you know, and and then, you know, then Full Cop and Roll was just like this transition into like experimenting with like new sounds and genres and like not wanting to be like Mumford and Sons or sound like Lumineers. Like we wanted to, you know, find our own thing that we could bring to the world. And then Pep Talks in this like very pop, this was like this vulnerable record, kind of learning how to be authentic with the world and sharing some of my personal you know, failures and successes and all that stuff. And then Revival was kind of written during my divorce, and really learning how to like deal with heartbreak. And like I was not doing great mentally. I was coping in all the wrong ways. I was not really admitting to myself like how much I was struggling. And so Revival was kind of like pointing us to the process, if that makes sense. So it's just, it was like, at the time, you know, to be honest with you, I was like really fighting for my marriage. And so I wasn't really able to, necessarily write about the defeat of the divorce. And then it, you know, the divorce ended up happening. And so now it was like when me and Brian kind of came back together and like, I don't want to write about this divorce. Like this feels too much, you know, like this is going to be a lot. And once we found kind of the stages of grief and, writing it from a position of like forgiveness and acceptance towards me and my ex, it felt like, oh, we can be honest as possible now because it's not, you know, there wasn't like any jab songs necessarily. It was all through the lens of like healing and trying to like help the world.
So right, just you're not taking shots at anyone. And you're not, and it's just really just a vulnerable. It's such a, just kind of, I love knowing that backstory. I just had a little brief thing about what, you know, kind of what the process is about. But yeah, I mean, it's an amazing record and the way it's written and everything else. I just love the approach on it.
Dude, thank you so much. Yeah, we're super excited to even like shed light on grief, because you know, for me and Brian both of our moms are therapists, My
Wow, that's
mom's
cool.
on like the counseling side, on the educational side, and Brian's is more like on the like the actual therapist side. But the stages of grief like really helped me even like relearn some of the places like that I was in denial, like with, and that goes outside of my divorce. Like it was like in a relationship and denial with me trying to be a savior for my mom who was struggling with addiction, like places in my heart. Like I had chronic back pain for like 2 years, after the news of some stuff that was going on in my marriage, and like I could not heal the back pain. Like I was doing ice baths every day, like all this stuff, until I really dealt with my anger. It didn't heal itself, and then when I let the anger kind of come up and really get angry about some of the things that were kind of going on, my back pain left.
No way. Wow.
Well, it was like very much like the body keeps the score type learning stuff for me during the process. And so it was really like healing for me and Brian to like write this and figure out these areas, like because I to be honest, like I the athlete in me was like, hey, give me a plan, I'll do it to heal, and
Right.
the truth is like there's no rule book to healing. There's no like step to step process. You like once you get through denial, it's not like you're done with denial. It's like acceptance and love and forgiveness is all about like being able to hold all of it and just being like, okay, I woke up today and I'm a bit sad because this thing happened or whatever it may be. And it's like, okay, I can sit with this and like treat this depression or sadness or anger like a friend. And once I started to have that kind of ability to like ask my anger, like, hey, what's up? Like, what are you angry about? And sit with it, then the healing really started kind of setting in. So it was we want this record. Our desire is just for it to be healing for other people's like unprocessed grief, because life is hard. I mean, I'm sure you have so many subsets of your own story that
Right. And I'm hearing so much of my story and yours. Just, I mean, I battle with addiction myself. So hearing that your mom has that, I mean, I'm just so sympathetic to that. And I've had four cervical spine surgeries. So I've had to do that. But I'm thinking, like, damn, if I just get rid of, maybe I'm holding a bunch of anger. I need to, maybe that will help. You know
Yeah,
what I
take that
mean?
baseball bat to some glass, bro.
Yeah. Shit. But yeah, this is, I mean, the album, like I said, is really cool. And I didn't know if it was gonna, it doesn't feel like it does, but like kind of go through, like if it was anger, those songs in that piece gonna be like really heavier. But it all is like cohesive through the whole thing. It doesn't roll like, spot on when it comes to those things, I don't feel. And I don't know if that's what you guys were going, like we're anger, like, okay, these are gonna be the harder songs, or these are the, denial is going to be more of the slower. Like, was that even a thought process, or was it just like these are the songs and we'll categorize them as they are?
I think we kind of pieced it together as we went along. Like there were times where we were like, well, which category would this song go in? But no, we didn't necessarily want to limit it to the angry songs have to be these really heavy rock screaming kind of thing. Like we really, even some acceptance songs, like the, if you read the lyrics, like they're hopeful, but they're real and dark at the same time. And I think we just wanted to showcase that reality, which is the process of grief, doesn't happen in this linear way where once you get through denial, you're in anger, and then you're in bargaining, and then you're in depression. We wanted to showcase how fluid that can be and how individual that can be. We want to portray the individuality of that story for Judah and for the band. And then hopefully that can relate to somebody who has their own version of pain and grief that they're going through.
That's all. Yeah, that makes so much more sense. Yeah, because it doesn't roll into like, okay, we're gonna write these two or three songs for anger, so let's make them angry. It was, you had already, the songs just happened as they happened, and then you guys went back and kind of categorized them where you felt it should work out.
Yeah, and I think it was really helpful having the framework of the stages of grief prior to all the songs being written, because it enabled us to work within this world of the grieving process. We had never made an album that way, where we kind of really knew the roadmap before all the songs were written. And it kind of just became a fun puzzle piece to kind of go through together and piece together.
Awesome. Did you?
We also had like really good references. Like me and Brian, you know, we loved being able to write like our own personal experience, you know, with these stages, but we are definitely not professionals in the field. So like we're just storytellers, you know, or that's what we're trying to tell this story. And so we definitely leaned on, we had some really good, like my aunt is actually in addiction, like on the preventional side. And
Oh,
she's
cool.
a professor at Tennessee Tech teaching. So she, I would call her or send her a song and be like, hey, you know, does this, you think this fits on the depression side or, you know, and then there's a song called Starting Over that I thought for sure was like kind of in the depression phase. And she was like, this is literal bargaining 101. Like you're saying that
Wow.
you're like wrestling with God. So we had like educational professionals that were kind of helping us navigate, which we definitely leaned on. And then again, like that helped us learn it. You know, that was like, oh, like that definitely was, because bargaining, for me at least, I never, you know, depression's kind of self-explanatory, denial, you know, anger, all that. And I'm like, what the hell is bargaining? Like, I don't really, is that I'm bargaining with myself or whatever this was. And so to have my aunt, Elizabeth, kind of help teach us, and my therapist, James, kind of, show us, it was really beautiful. And just even on like an educational side of stuff. So we're definitely like a little bit more, I guess we're lucky to have, you know, these people kind of on our sides that really helped us through it.
Yeah, you have like the professional resources to kind of help you navigate
Yeah.
the thing. I mean, yeah, just the whole thing, like all of that just reminds me, you know, I, like I said, I've struggled with addiction and I'm in 12 steps, and a lot of it kind of reminds me of going through those and just like having to really look at yourself and you know, you do your resentment list and all that stuff. Like that reminds me of like kind of how you, after hearing you guys talk about the album, where it kind of goes up and down, and it's not just this linear process. It's not okay, now I'm in anger, now I'm in bargaining. It's like you kind of go through waves. And the fact that you wrote the album and were like, oh, this should, I feel like this is starting over is more of a, like the depression. And then your aunt's like, nah, I mean, that's definitely bargaining. You know what I mean? You kind of
Yeah,
have
yeah, yeah,
somebody to
yeah.
like bounce your idea off in a way.
Yeah, totally. Good. Also, good for you, man. Like, keep that up.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. I
My
really love.
mom is in the 12 steps currently, and she's, I guess she's like 90 days sober,
Oh,
as
hell yeah.
well.
That's
So,
amazing. Congratulations to your mom. That's hard, man. The
yeah.
first year is pretty brutal.
Yeah. One of my favorite teachers says that we're all addicts. And I firmly believe that, like, it might not be like through like a substance or whatever, but I would call myself an addict. You know, I'm an addict to like certain thoughts and things. And I think we're all kind of in this life are, you know, can kind of default to being addicted to something, you know.
Sure.
So good for you for doing the work.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I had a therapist tell me one time that she's like, I think they should teach the 12 steps in school. And I was like, oh, that does make sense. I mean, you could pretty much put that first line to anything and,
Well,
you know,
that's what
really have to look at yourself.
my aunt, that's what, essentially she's in like the holistic side of therapy, to where it's like holistic meaning, you know, like sometimes the world can kind of like stack like big pharma, like medicine on stuff, like after the symptoms already come out. But,
Yeah.
she's like her field, and she just got like an amazing grant for it, is like actually going into like families' houses and teaching these kids like ways of preventing becoming like addicts to things. So I
Wow.
think that's like really beautiful. Like you're onto something there of like how we can kind of help heal the world through like what you're saying. Like, hey, you know, this could be something that comes up in your life. Here's the way to kind of look at it before it actually starts happening.
Yeah, that's really amazing. That's so cool that your aunt's doing that. Wow. And here in Tennessee, I love
I definitely want to,
that.
like, I think, you know, I want to be an advocate for that, even like for young bands too. Like,
Yeah.
because, you know, I think there's such an addiction for artists, like with the adrenaline and like this amount of like, you know, all of the serotonin hits when you're on stage, and it makes sense why bands and you know, people kind of really struggle with substances. And anyways, that's a rabbit hole, but I think
No,
you're onto
no.
something there. Just like teaching, you know, the 12-step program or whatever it may be to help prevent the toxicity of what could happen. I think that's really beautiful.
Sure. No, thank you. I think no. I love the album. FLA is. I think is it just FLA or because there's a space on the copy I have. I love that song. I think the whole album is awesome, but that one really stuck out to me. And the one with Kay Flay. I love Kay Flay. I've had her on a couple times.
Yeah, she's the best.
Yeah, tell me about working with her and having her on that song. It's definitely not something that, her own personal project is so much different than that song, but the way that you guys come together is so awesome.
Yeah, she's such an amazing artist. We love her a lot. We kind of became friends with her during that. She had Blood in the Cut out, and we had Take It All Back. So we were doing a bunch of these like radio things, shows together. And she's just such a force. Like, she's got obviously such a beautiful spirit. And I became kind of closer with her through the pandemic. We would just catch up. She was going through a lot, like with her ear, hearing loss, and I was kind of going through this divorce, and I just lost my uncle to, you know, to suicide, and so like a lot of stuff was kind of happening in my
Jeez.
life, trying to like navigate, and she's just the best. So we have nothing but respect for her, and then it's like we have to do a song together. So the she has all that feistiness and power, and you blend that in with like some banjo, and it kind of was a fun song to kind of do with her. I mean, it was just like all over Zoom too, so it was really fun.
Oh wow, that was all done via Zoom. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So were you it, like she just cut the vocals and send it back to you guys, or like how did? Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah, we kind of had the track, and then we thought it was going to be kind of like a duet feature, but our voices together throughout the whole song was kind of the ticket. It was it ended up being kind of like weirdly special. So yeah, we love her a lot, and love that song. It holds a special kind of like place in anger with like sarcasm. I think anger for me at least kind of came with a lot of like, I don't know, it has to kind of come with like a little bit of wit and like sarcasm. You kind of have to have fun with it, or you're just gonna get miserable.
Sure. Well, the album's coming out next month, I believe, right? 10th of
May
May.
10th. Yep.
And you have some shows coming up with Need to Breathe, but are you guys gonna do your own thing? Maybe play here in your hometown in Nashville, Tennessee?
We'll
Oh
look at
yeah.
here next fall, baby.
Okay. Killer. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thank you both so much for doing this. And sorry you have to be in the car, dude. I didn't mean
No, that was my fault. My fault.
to. But I appreciate you guys. I love what you're doing. I love the album, and I became a fan. I can't say at the beginning, but in 2016 when I heard that song, I was like, damn, these guys have something real special here. And I have one more quick question for you both, if I can get an answer. And from each of you, if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Yeah, one of our mentors from the beginning, just he really kind of guided us in those beginning years. And one thing he told us was, which is super cliche, but he just said, only write the songs that make you inspired and make you happy, and stay true to who you are, because there's people in this industry that are going to want to tell you who you are before you even have discovered that for yourself. And that's what ruins a lot of artists. So really sticking to that inner voice and that journey of discovering your sound or whatever it is for any kind of artist, was super important for us to kind of stick together on, as a band in the beginning years.
Love it.
Yeah, this question is always so hard because it's like, there's so much to say, but I think, for me, like finding your ability to like be loved outside of music or your art or your craft is really important. I feel like your identity can get so wrapped up if you're doing well, or you're doing not, if you have a hit, if you're selling out shows or not, if people give a shit about you, you know, like a lot of my ability to be loved kind of got like lost in the weeds of a lot of that. So first find that. And then second is the belief has to be there because it's really, really hard. You have to work really, really hard. You know, some people say 10,000 hours and I would probably say like 30,000 hours, like get after it and have fun, you know. At the end of the day, like in music or art, it's meant to be enjoyed. That's the reason why you start it, not for anything else. So try to enjoy the process, no pun intended.